broadcast on the video in just a moment, so thanks for being here. If you have any questions tonight as we go through this topic of self-esteem, please feel free to send me a text at 801-541-9181. Okay, it looks like we're live on our broadcast, and we're going to start our recording. And hopefully everybody will be with us. Give them just a moment to come back on the line on the video broadcast. Well, thanks for being with us tonight. This is one of my favorite evenings. Not just Tuesday night, our celebration for life, when we all get together and talk about these principles, but this particular session, this coaching session where we take on a very complex topic of self-esteem. I'm going to do my very best to perhaps give you some insights if you've attended this session before on self-esteem that are new. And for those of you who are visiting with us, perhaps precisely what you need tonight. That's the way we approach these evenings. This information is available for you on your Intentional Creation Studio. Just click on the studio, log on to the studio, go to intentionalcreation.com, member login. When you get to the studio, click on quality number 6, self-esteem, and you can have quite a comprehensive review of this information. We'll be going through some significant parts and some additional pieces tonight to assist you in taking on this most important of all topics. The challenge is this. The greatest secret of success in all ventures is being able to get beyond ourselves and focus on another person, to do so with a heightened level of awareness, to be able to have agape love. Greeks had eros, pia, philo, agape. Agape meaning that heightened level of awareness, being able to step back and let go of our bias and our prejudice and see the pricelessness and the uniqueness in a human being. And in knowing from Dr. Hartman's work that everyone has this wall of resistance, and when we care enough to take down that wall by listening and by asking empathetic questions from our own life experience, and that wall comes down, then in a non-adversarial relationship, that's friends, that's companions, it's committed companionship, that even in that healthy of a relationship, a person still holds back, on average, 40% of their cooperation and productivity. That's an enormous percent. And when we're focused on them, and we're listening, and we're taking down these walls, and the walls come down, we are safe, and we create a safe place. That cooperation and productivity floods out to us, and we're the beneficiary. Sometimes we can say, I come to this process, Dave, and I'm just so drained. I'm just so beat up. My cup is so empty. How can I focus on serving other people? And the answer is, well, let's work on this together to help you become increasingly healthy. But that which you are hungering for, thirsting for in your cup, will come when walls come down and cooperation floods out. That's the gift you're given. We're caring enough about another person to listen. However, this is extremely difficult, as we've done thousands of assessments. It's not unusual for someone to have very high levels of empathy, which we'll be talking about next week when we get into quality number 1, connecting with people. Very accurate and intuitive feelings and thoughts, external thoughts, that allow us to see people clearly and have the capacity to step into their world. However, the thought processes in this particular area are so burdened, are so noisy, are so overwhelming that they just absolutely put a wet blanket on our ability to connect with others. So, as we go through the process of the 6 qualities, and now we finally come to the 6th, self-esteem, which we save for last intentionally, We're going to work on the last few pieces. We won't heal self-esteem tonight. We'll just learn some of the ways to heal self-esteem so that we can begin this process. And the more comfortable we become with ourselves, our own skin, being real and genuine and authentic without a need to impress and pretend or feel ashamed or fear. The more we become that real and genuine and authentic, the more comfortable we'll be connecting with people. Now, Dr. Hartman did say that the objective is to be real, genuine, authentic, without that need to impress and pretend and feel ashamed or fear. And he said this is the hardest task in our mortal existence. Isn't that interesting? The hardest task in our mortal existence. And then he punctuated with this statement. And the highest level of maturity. Yes. When we finally start to become comfortable with ourselves, so that we're not focused on us. We're okay. We're whole and complete and available. And we can listen to other people and we can serve them. This is the definition of maturity. Great thing to know. We've all had a lot of things happen in our lives. A lot of things that are traumatic that can impact our self-esteem. Some of them are easily identifiable. Some of them are just situations when we were being raised that maybe weren't that affirming, that validating, that nurturing. And we really never got past that dialogue to put those building blocks in place. Many of you know the story that we'll talk about in more detail next week, the Chicago Dream, and how I started my childhood at a very young age, and the confusion that created, the doubt, the fear, the aloneness, and how challenging it was to put that building block back in place. There are going to be times when we're looking at self-esteem, and there are going to be moments when we will need professional assistance. I'm not a therapist, I'm a coach. I'm here when you're ready to move forward to assist you in doing so. But there may have been some painful experiences. Some you may not have wanted to look at. I didn't want to look at mine for 50 years. 50 years. Now is still fairly healthy considering what had happened, being in the hands of a pedophile from the age of 2 to 4. That was a blessing. But I can tell you that it was a focused effort for the better part of 10 years to be okay. And then came the Chicago Dream and an understanding of what we do with these experiences. I will not talk tonight about therapeutic issues. I am not a therapist. And how to process traumatic events. But I can tell you that one of the greatest secrets to healing self-esteem happens when we finally make the decision that we no longer want to be a victim of our own circumstance. We want to be a victor. We want to rise above those things that have happened to us and find a joy and peace of mind. See, one of the great risks that we face is that if we have all of these challenges and frustrations and this terrible dialogue going on with us, we're dragging it around in this sack. And it's exhausting. And we defer the responsibility for our own happiness and joy to others, hoping that somehow they'll show up for us, that they'll love us, that they'll seek to understand us, that they'll appreciate us and all the suffering and sacrifice and frustration and pain we've experienced. If we do this, we are going to be in for a very long and painful life. And it's not because people don't care. They do. They just don't have the energy for it. Because they, too, are dragging around their own sack, their own dialogue, their own challenges, their own fears, their own doubts, their own frustrations, their own history. And what little energy is left they're using to prop up the facade that I'm okay. Because all of us look okay, do we not? And when we look to to that exhausted person to feed us. It's like trying to fill up our gas tank from an empty gas station. It's like when the days came that the gas was being rationed and it's now gone, it's like trying to fill our car up with that empty gas. It won't happen. And then we get angry with those who will not give us their gas, who will not give us their energy, who will not pay attention to us, who will not appreciate us. This is why it's so important as we're going through this process to realize that the very things, again, that will fill our empty cup come when we care enough about others to take down their walls of resistance, and that flood of cooperation and productivity floods over us and fills our cup to overflowing. That's where it comes from. It won't come from others. Now, you'll find rare people occasionally that are so okay, they don't drag a sack around. They have energy. They're wonderful givers. They're rare. They're beautiful people. Our objective is to eventually become one of them, one of the rare ones. But there is that moment in time in self-esteem where we'll want to say, wow, am I an energy suck? Do I take from everyone I come in contact with? Do I whine and complain and, oh, woe is me and all my energy, and I even drag out my sentences like this? Don't be offended. My wife is sitting here next to me, and she could tell you stories. She's been gracious enough and patient as I've worked through this very issue. Still working through this very issue. She just kicked me, so I would say that. No, she actually didn't. Still working through it. So I feel confident I can speak to you pretty candidly tonight about this one. Because I can still weep and complain with the best of them. And what I know as I look back on those moments, I wasn't fed, nor did I feed anyone else. I simply left them exhausted, even more so. That's not attractive. Who wants to be around an energy suck? So if you're like me and you wake up one day and go, wow, I'm an energy suck, we're going to talk about some things today to help let that go. And then with graciousness, may I say that if you're dealing with a painful life experience that you just can't get over on your own, do seek medical assistance, therapeutic assistance, clergy, the police, wherever you need to go. Get some professional counseling. Someone can help you process through so that we can get to the moment. Now, in the Chicago Dream, there was a moment. In the new book, I just finished the chapter. We're going to be publishing it. Do you know when it's going to be? Next Tuesday. Okay, so next Tuesday, this chapter will be published. And you'll have access to it. The Chicago Dream, where instead of just saying, well, then the next thing that happened was, I actually explained the next thing that did happen. And it's very simple. That when we empty our sack and we look at these things, if we can, we may not be able to, and that's where therapists can help us, but if we can hold these moments in our hands, for me, those silver orbs, you just pick them up and go, wow, that was awful. That was awful. Because in the dream, the voice said to me, is anyone else suffering from a similar wound? That was an awakening comment. Is anyone else suffering from a similar wound? I had been ignoring this wound, struggling from this wound, being pressured by this wound, feeling less than because of this wound. And all of a sudden, I'm introduced to a different concept. Is there anyone else suffering from a similar wound? Yes, I'm sure of it, I responded. Then engrave it on your heart. So I did. As I picked up the next experience in my life, some of these very painful, some things I had done I wasn't proud of, things done to me, economic issues, challenges that have been along the way. Pick that next one up. Question, is anyone else suffering from a similar wound? Yeah. Then engrave this on your heart. Repeated experience after experience, is there anyone else suffering from a similar wound? When this question is asked, either by us or by a loving God, if we say, wow, I wonder if, that is the moment that self-esteem begins to heal. That's the moment. If you're trying to find the one absolute pinpoint, that's the pinpoint. That's the pinpoint. Yes, I'm sure of it. Then engrave this on your heart. Because in the dream, when I was asked to turn around, I noticed that the man had approached me before, you know, that I'd seen approach me. That's the first time I noticed that he too was dragging a sack. My heart, Og talks about this in Scroll 2. He talks about my heart can become small and bitter. That's what happens when we let despair and victimhood take us over. But when we share our heart, it grows. When we take those experiences, engrave them, and then share, we listen differently, ask questions differently. Our heart grows, and it warms the earth. We feel good. We have served someone. That which has happened to us that's been such a burden is now a blessing to lift and build another human being. That feels good. As we take down walls and the cooperation floods out to us, that feels good. As we see us showing up in this service and we see our soul healing, our heart healing, that feels good. This is where we find the crux of self-esteem. I might also suggest to you very boldly tonight that self-esteem cannot begin to heal until we are willing to ask this question. We will not find the answers going deep inside our souls, peeling away the onion, trying to find the answers for why my aunt did this or my uncle did that or somebody did this or somebody did that. They say knowing the why is the booby prize. I'm not sure that's totally true. Facing what you know to be true. But we go into ourselves and we find what we would call a very self-centric black hole. A black hole is a very dense place that light cannot penetrate. Light, joy, peace, inspiration cannot penetrate. And far too many are looking there for their answers. I've just shared with you one of the great truths. The answer to self-esteem comes when we ask the question, is anyone else suffering from a similar wound? Yes, I'm sure of it. Then we begin a process of engraving on our heart. We begin a process of intrinsic validation, which we'll go into detail next week. We start listening differently. We start asking different questions. Connections are deep and rich and meaningful. We don't worry about being intelligent or having all the answers. It's not about us. We're focused on the needs of another. We're focused on being interested and not being interesting. We're curious. We listen to understand where someone is. And the rewards are enormous. want to share this with you tonight to start. I've been working on the next chapter of the book, and this is the topic. This crux, this moment of truth, and what it can do to help us finally get outside of ourselves and awaken, for many, absolutely most, an enormous capacity to be empathetic, to put ourselves on another person's path, empathy, and to see clearly and accurately what's going on in their life. We finally can free up this great gift. It's like a huge vein of gold that's covered with dirt. We're finally cleaning off with a shovel the dirt and brushing it off. And gold at almost $1,900 an ounce would suggest it's pretty valuable. This is like a gold vein in our life. It's our greatest asset. Our ability to love and care about other people and step into their world and take down their walls and be the beneficiary of their cooperation and productivity. Well, that's where we want to get. What keeps us from coming to this moment? That's where we're going to go next. What keeps us from asking that question? What keeps us absorbed in ourself? And it brings us to the next baseline, and it's an absolute baseline. And the baseline is, just write this down, the word is a single word. It's called ease. Ease. It's understandable in today's firestorms why people would like to have it easy. It's difficult at times. It takes all of our energy sometimes just to get up and keep moving forward. I get it. But for the last decade, we have tried to convince ourselves, and so have many pundits and their participation, that there is somehow a magical fantasy fairy who's going to grant our wishes if we just visualize them with enough intention. Ramon and I, driving to the cabin this last week, took the occasion to read Napoleon Hill's new book, Outwitting the Devil. If you don't have a copy, I'd recommend you go get it. It's a fabulous book. You get to see a real spiritual side of Napoleon Hill, a very tender spiritual side, as he interviews the devil. He makes it clear what is manifest and what we do. Well, great challenge. When we want ease, we're basically saying, I'm tired of living this way, which means I'm tired of living. I just want to escape from all of this. Can you feel it? I just want a life without any more stress, any more frustration and pain, without debt, with time freedom and financial freedom. Can you hear the plea? This is victimhood at its highest level. Its highest level. I just want to take, so I don't have to give anymore. That's what ease means. And so we engage in fantasy. We escape from now to a time in the future when we already have, and then we begin to live beyond that time. The physiological challenges that are created in doing that, enormous. Just enormous. The body autonomically, more than automatically, goes into a defense mechanism to protect that visualization. All kinds of chemicals released in our body. We are emotionally and physically at a cellular level debilitated, if not disabled. It is an awful thing. And the pattern's so clear. When I go there, I have seen it so clearly. I've grown men cry day, but I can almost touch it. I can almost taste it. Why can't I have it? And the answer is hard to hear because nobody gets to have it that way. That's not the way it happens. But there are those for a few bucks that want to sell it to you, and there are those who don't read the rest of the paragraph when that's what they're looking for. They don't hear the rest of the story. And what happens? This is the singular greatest cause for why we don't get to this moment. Because we turn inward when our life doesn't show up the way we've so clearly envisioned it. And we beat ourselves up in one of three places. You can look at your assessment on the right-hand side, whole and complete, which is an intrinsic value of myself, my worth and worthiness. We start to question that. Does God not love me? Then we can start to question our confidence, that measurement, which is about our ability. We question our ability to be able to create it. Valiant, we begin to question our belief systems. Pragmatic, we begin overwhelmed by everything that has to be done to actually get there. And realistic, there's often a big chasm between where we are and where we want to be, and it's a painful chasm, a daily reminder of our failure and inadequacies. You add to that honorable and a belief that we must do everything perfectly. And we've got a cocktail unparalleled. Unparalleled. One that is so pervasive that it is a major contributor to our current economic situation in this nation and world. A sense of entitlement, ease. Don't have to work for it. We should just get it. And fantasy of what it'd be like when, believing that somehow that actually creates it. I was reflecting yesterday on some great stories in the past. And one of the great stories we find from people that accomplish marvelous things is that most of them don't spend one moment looking beyond the event. Peter Vidmar, just writing his name down on a piece of paper. Tim Daggett, his workout partner. Peter was an Olympic athlete, 1984 Olympics. 12 years of preparation. 12 years. He said they worked out 4, 5, 6 hours a day, 6 days a week. Took off Sundays because that was his Sabbath. And he said, I only remember taking off 30 other days during that 12 years. I'm hearing this story firsthand, sitting up at Deer Valley with several friends, with Kevin Hall, the July before his book Aspire was released, there with the publisher, and we had the same agent. She was there, and people from the Covey organization, and Richard Paul Evans, wonderful human beings, all there, all sharing what they could do to help Kevin. All of us beholden to him because he was such a giver. And Peter was telling us that he worked out like this. And then he took us to a workout, one of them, just so we could see what it was like. After he did a handstand on a folding chair. He said that they would do the floor exercises, and they would do the parallel bars last, just like at the Olympics. And just before they began the parallel bars, and they've been exercising now 4, maybe 5 hours, they've got those protectors on their hands. You've seen those that the gymnasts wear. So it didn't matter. The blisters had already popped. Muscles were aching. And Peter would turn to Tim and say, why are we here? Tim knew. Tim would say to Peter, why are we here? And Peter knew. And then they turned that practice facility into the Olympic venue. It was the Olympics. The last exercise on the floor. They were the last two to perform. If they performed with excellence, perfectly, the United States team would finally beat Republic of China for the first time since 1905. Peter said back then the javelin was part of the men's gymnastics. It was a long time ago. It's been a long time since they won. Now, Peter had already won a gold for getting a perfect 10 on the pommel horse. But they would turn this into the Olympic venue, the crowds roaring, judges raising their hand. They would go up and do their exercise, perfect dismount, switch, and the other one would do it. Then they would switch, and the other one would do it. Then they would switch, and the other one would do it. Until they reached the point of exhaustion. Peter said, we never once in our minds went one moment beyond that event. Ponder that for a moment. Everything in their mind in the future was preparing for that moment because everything depended on that being done successfully. There was no gold medal unless they did. There was no Learjet. There was no flag raise. There's no anthem playing. There's no flowers. There's no gold medal. There's no speaking engagements. Peter became a member of the Speakers Hall of Fame. Multi-million-dollar earner in the speaking world. Still does his pommel horse routine on stage at the age of 50. It's amazing. But none of that was explored during those 12 years. Just doing that, which everything depended on, perfectly. And Peter asked us this question, practice makes, and unanimously the group said, perfect. He said, yes, but what I learned is practice makes permanent. When they got to the Olympics, and they were in the last exercise, and if Tim, who went before Peter, and he performed with excellence, they could beat the Republic of China. It was possible. And Tim did his routine and dismounted, perfect 10. Wow! Crowds are erupting. Peter's waiting to be signaled by the judge to go up onto the mat and do his routine. So his coach walked up to me and said, Peter, do this the way you've done it 1,000 times in practice, and then let's go home. And Peter said, I then turned the Olympic venue into the practice venue and did it as I had done it 1,000 times before. Well, it's history. The American gymnastic team in 1984 did win the gold all around. A wonderful, successful event. But what I learned from Peter, more profoundly than any other conversation I've had with him, with a winner at that level, is he did not escape into the future and then spend time imagining what it would be like after he won the gold. He knew that between where he was and the gold was all in the future. And he was going to spend all of his time there. He didn't have to worry about norepinephrine rushes and cortisol and depression and anxiety from unmet expectation. He didn't have to worry about hating his life and beating himself up and questioning his value and his beliefs and his ability. This is the number one cause of us not getting to this moment. The number one cause. I remember speaking in Sacramento and a young man in the back right-hand side says, oh, I got it. I finally get it. The conversation was that he'd grown up in a healthy family. He had great parents who loved him. Father took him fishing and hunting. He was a regular child in a great environment. Good education. Self-esteem in the toilet, he said. And now he knew why. It wasn't about the nurturing he received as a child. It was about the nurturing he was giving himself. He was living a life filled with norepinephrine highs and cortisol-driven lows. And as a result, he was questioning his own value as a human being. spend time in a couple of weeks about how to use our mind differently. I'm going to spend time on that tonight. I just got a message, World Server. Hi, Dave and Ron and all. Hi, World Server. let us root this one out. Come back next week and let's start working on the art of connection. And then let's come back the next week. Oh, World Server's Lanny. Hi, Lanny. Good to see your name. Glad you're with us tonight. Let us come back in the next 3 or 4 weeks and take on how we're using our mind. Because it's just killing us. And I'll tell you what, I've watched so many companies still try to somehow promote the Big Bang Theory, the fireworks in the sky, and everybody gets all excited, and then you try to explain what everybody's excited about, nobody can explain it. Because all it does is drive fantasy. Truth is a matter. And in business, we talk to people. We listen. We connect. We care. So, self-esteem requires this. Are you ready? Fundamental shift. We look at this thing called ease and we go, wow, I've been so consumed by this. I've been telling everybody my why is my wife and my kids and la-da-da-da, but secretly, privately, when I'm by myself fantasizing, I am in the Caribbean scuba diving. I got a Learjet. I got an island somewhere, a tropical island where I can tell the world to go to heck because I don't want to deal with annoying people anymore. That's where I am privately, secretly. That's my why. My why is a fantasy, and a fantasy can never drive the passion necessary to do the work to create something in tangible reality. It will never happen. Because we've skipped past all of that. When we're facing it, it just becomes boring, mundane, repetitious, burdensome, hard. But here's the fundamental shift. I invite all of you to start tonight. This will help you heal your self-esteem. Make the decision. Today's September 13th, 2011. In spite of the firestorms, the economy, the stock market, whatever it might be, in spite of it all, in spite of your credit card balances, your lack of money in a savings account, the condition of your residence, your cars, your family, your relationships, no matter what, make the decision. Today. Today I'm going to re-engage in life. I'm going to re-engage in life. Start eating better. I'm going to start exercising. I'm going to start studying principles. I'm going to start taking on life again. That's an exciting thought. But I'm going to embrace those principles and apply them in my life and start realizing the rewards from living passion-driven, vision-driven, mission-driven. I'm going to focus on connecting with people. I've been wanting to avoid people, get away from people, and in some businesses I need to talk to them and act like I care about them, but really I just want them to buy the product so I got enough money to buy that tropical island so I don't have to talk to them anymore. Listen, I'm going to fall in love with them. I'm going to listen. I'm going to take my life experiences, hold them in my heart, and listen differently. Ask different questions. Connect and make friends everywhere I go and serve people. Knowing that when I do, the walls come down and I'm the beneficiary. So in addition to engaging, embracing principles, connecting with people, I'm going to start creating value in everything I do. The conversations I have with my loved ones, the moments we spend together. This was Saturday up at Bloomington Lake. I've got a cold, as you can tell, and I had one Saturday. And I made the decision Saturday morning when I woke up that I was going to show up. I work a lot. But Saturday was with the family. We're up at the cabin, and they wanted to hike up to Bloomington Lake, beautiful mountain lake, glacier-fed. And I'm the cameraman, and 10 of our family members, all the boys and a couple of the women, were on this big rope swing, swinging out over the lake and dropping into water. I don't know what the temperature was. 45 or 50 maybe. Maybe not. maybe not even that. I mean, you almost had to break the ice to jump in. The glacier was still melting behind into the back of the lake. Very cold. And I'm thinking while I'm taking these pictures, I'm engaged in life. I'm embracing principles. I'm connecting with and serving people. I'm creating value everywhere I can go. And then it hit me. It's your turn. It's your turn! So I went up just to swing. I was going to swing out and swing back. And then I got a little concerned about whether I could hang on that long. They said, why don't you just take off your shirt and take your wallet out of your pants and take off your shoes and go in the water? And I thought, why not? Why not? I remember vividly swinging out and letting go and hitting those needles. Actually, it was water, but it felt more like needles. And swimming to the shore. What moved me the most wasn't that I did it. It's what it did to my children. That's what moved me. They were still talking about it a couple hours later. Son-in-law left that weekend talking about it. How proud he was. I thought, wow. I need to do that more often. I need to show up like that. In what ways have you been buried in discouragement and frustration? Overwhelm. And you haven't been showing up in your relationships with your children, your spouses, your closest friends. September 13, 2011, let us decide to be alive. This is the day. This is when we let go of the desire for ease and the vapid wasteland of fantasy. It will never create reality. It's like a drug. It's an artificial counterfeit form of joy. And we will pay an awful price every time within 24 hours. Just like snorting a line of cocaine or getting drunk in alcohol. When you come back down, reality's still there and often worse than when you left it. It's time to be alive. This is the beginning of healing your self-esteem. Fantasy keeps us from this moment. When we're alive and we are blessing people's lives and creating value, it's so easy to say, I wonder if this wound is being suffered by anyone else. Of course. Wow. We show up. And again, we're the beneficiary. Now, I've talked a little bit about some of those fragile underpinnings of trust and how they can be damaged. Some of those things are hard to look at. But we can take those, the most painful. They're actually the most valuable. They just absolutely sharpen our senses, our intuition. When we own those really painful ones, maybe you've lost a home or lost a companion, and through a divorce or a death, maybe you were abused as a child, whatever it might be, those really tough ones. Those just heighten our awareness. We hear such subtlety in people's voices. When we choose to listen, we'll ask empathetic questions that are daring. How seriously are you considering suicide? Whew. Someone responds, it's all I've been thinking about. You could be a party to blessing or even saving a life because of those moments that are so painful. So get to a therapist if you need to. If you're ready to, then get them in your heart so you can start showing up alive. You see how fantasy keeps you from being in this space? You rob yourself and everyone else of your greatest gifts. No longer, not after today. Now, the last was a tough one. The third cause of self-esteem challenges is when there is a discrepancy between what we present to the world and our secret self. Can you see these two? If you're listening on the telephone, I'm holding one hand open and the other's a fist. My hand, this opens the facade I present to the world. The fist is my real secret self. Are there things going on in our secret life, addictions, pornography, alcohol, drugs, eating disorders, challenges? Those are the ones we're talking about when we're talking about this particular kind of a situation, where our behavior is inconsistent with what we really know is good and true. We know. We really do know. The question is, who am I? Am I the facade or am I the secret self? The truth is, you're not either one of them. The real you is the observer of these two. And working with those who specialize in this field is when we step back from this. We let go of the facade, we let go of the secret behavior, and we start to show up. We start to show up, I am. And we seek that assistance from a power greater than ourselves, what Napoleon Hill calls infinite intelligence, and others might call the power of creation. I like to call God. And we finally surrender our pride and our will. If there's anybody in that space tonight, gosh, my heart just goes out to you. I have a hard time with potato chips. I don't mean to make that comical. I would not. I just don't know what it's like to have that kind of an addiction. I have watched a brother who just celebrated 2 years of sobriety. So from afar, I've watched the courage that it takes. I don't know how painful it is. A dear friend was just recently married after being sober for nearly 3 years. Wow, is that a beautiful ceremony. Just an amazing human being. The power in someone who actually does this and the service they can provide to another because of it. Encouraging and inspiring, Kevin Hall's word, breathing air into someone's life so they too can be free. What a blessing. Well, we're back to that little moment. Sometimes it's an addiction that keeps us from being there. Sometimes it's a life experience that's just so painful. Most commonly, it's a desire for ease. And the fantasy that accompanies that desire. And the destruction that creates in our self-esteem. That robs us, burdens us, buries us, and keeps us from showing up in the lives of other people. So what do we do? What do we do? We're about to launch it starting next week. We are going to talk about the Chicago Dream and getting those experiences in our heart, showing up and listening differently. We're going to talk about using our mind constructively so that just as vividly that we visualize, we vividly see possibility that ignites our passion and then drives our action and our effort and our focus and our discipline. Actively doing whatever is necessary to create a tangible reality, that which we've seen so clearly in our mind. We'll let go of resistance and rebellion and resentment. We'll find joy in the journey, and then we'll be back to self-esteem. Talk about, here's the charge, and here's the challenge, and then we'll go right back into the processes that help us overcome this. I want to just read a paragraph or two. I did this last time we went through this quality. I just love this reference from Dr. Hartman, who did the mathematics for our assessment. He said, self-love. So we need to love ourselves. That's the first practice. But he said, self-love is more about reverence for the infinite and intrinsic gift of life in general. And then starting with our own. It's more about honoring and magnifying the gifts that have been given than lamenting the ones that seem to be missing. It's more about focusing on contribution to the world than the endless accumulation of things. And quoting Dr. Hartman, he says, unless you like yourself, you cannot like anybody else. Unless you feel that you are of importance, nothing can be important to you. You must feel that you're important. You must take yourself seriously. If you take yourself as an accident that just as might well not happened, if you dislike your own self, then you are lost. You are lost to the universe. You cannot enrich the world. And you have been created to enrich the world. When we get to the process of using your mind constructively, I will share with you, and I hope you'll come back this time with a new intention, how to get an inspired idea. Like, if there's anyone I can serve, put them on my path and I'll serve them. Getting that inspired idea, just visualize this with me, and trusting it and acting on it and discovering that was actually inspired was from beyond you. And you were trusted with it. And you began to trust those impressions. And you're trusted with more impressions. And we begin to find one of those things that will take us right to this moment. When we know and are known. When we trust and are trusted. When we take action and fully use the gifts we've been given and are endowed with even more, and people are miraculously put on our path who can serve us and who we can serve, we begin to get a glimpse of who we are. And when we do, our heart will heal, for we are something special. Nature's greatest miracle. For we are here for a purpose. And as Og said, that purpose is to grow into a mountain, not to shrink to a grain of sand. Henceforth, I will apply all of my efforts to become the highest mountain of all, and I'll strain my potential until it cries for mercy. Write this down, September 13, 2011, the night I decided to live. I am nature's greatest miracle. It's a pleasure to be with you tonight, and bless you. If you'd like to spend some time with the scroll, spend it with time with scroll 4. I'm nature's greatest miracle. Followed up with scroll 9, I will act now. It's acting on impressions. It's acting passion-driven that we begin to meet the miracle that's called us. Well, thanks, everyone. Have a glorious week. Come back next Tuesday night ready to take on quality number one. We're starting this process anew. Let us come back determined that by the time we get to quality 6, we will feel differently about us because we'll be showing up differently in the world. And we'll be more joyful,